is the Adult Swim Podcast. Today is April 30th, 2020. I'm Matt Harrigan. With me today, Maxime Simone. Welcome, Max.
Hi, guys. Thanks for listening to the podcast.
That's it, huh? That's your colorful intro?
And then we play an ad, and then we're done.
What about the G-bag?
Oh, that's right.
Going dipping into the Adult Swim Podcast Gmail. Hello, I hope you are well and safe. My name is Serge, a Moldovan-American music artist. I wanted to forward you a few links to my new material, thinking you'd be interested. Max, are you interested?
No.
Okay. Me neither. Jake L. writes, I really want Vernon Chapman on the podcast, especially since Shivering Truth Season 2 is coming out and there's not been too much promotion on it. I think that's a great idea. No guarantees.
I got some work email updates.
What do you got?
I will be away from the computer from 12 to 1 p.m. today. Just a heads up.
Okay. Who's that from?
I don't remember. I just noted it down.
Haruko writes, question to Matt. Are you going to voice Licker in season 3 of 12 Ounce Mouse? No. Follow-up question to Max, how's life?
Pretty good. I had a dream last night. I was at Post Malone's big concert, and I spent most of the evening talking with Yao Ming, the famous tall Chinese basketball player, and we really got along.
Are you a Yao Ming fan?
No, I don't even know much about him. I recognize his face, and I guess my dream wanted a tall man in my face, a tall Chinese basketball player named Yao Ming.
Why do you think that your dream presented him to you?
I don't know. It made no sense. I rejected someone who tried to make out with me in the dream. And I feel like they were really like, what a loser, not making out with me backstage at Post Malone's big concert. I'm walking around. It's in like the backstage hallways and there's lights, you know, it's lights and loud music, like a big gala. It's a big concert. It's like a fashion show all at the same time. And Yao Ming's just like, oh, how'd you end up here? And I'm like, you're Yao Ming, right? And we just had a conversation and really got along.
Wow. I wouldn't have thought that you'd known much about Yao Ming.
I don't know much. I know his face. I know his hair. Uh-huh. Doesn't he have like a crew cut? What's a crew cut?
Anyway, Haruko finishes up. Love the podcast. Keep it up. Thank you, Haruko. Closing up the G-bag. This week's Adult Swim podcast, Tender Touches. It's a show. And we'll get to that in just a moment. Reminder, Beef House and Three Busy Debras continues at midnight, Sunday night on the network. And if you have any requests, comments, concerns, criticisms, do what Haruko did and send them to adultswimpodcast@gmail.com. Tender Touches. Please let me introduce two more of our guests, Dave Bonowitz and Lauren Payne. Dave and Lauren, come on down. Tender Touches. Promoted.
Season 3 of Tender Touches premiering June 15th, which is my birthday. On Adult Swim.
Whoa, was that intentional?
I think so.
Did you ask somebody to premiere it on your birthday?
No, I think they just did that just for me, just as a surprise.
How old are you going to be?
You sound so low energy, Dave. I don't think people are going to be interested in the show if you don't sound excited about it.
All right. We'll take it a step back.
All right. Take two.
Tender Touches premiering June 15th, which is my birthday.
Whoa, how old are you turning? Like Lauren asked.
27.
Nice.
Wow, I'm 27, too.
Wow. It's a really a rock star year for all three of us.
Walk the world through your meeting, the three of you.
Well, we should say probably that Max, who's one of the hosts, also co-creator of the show.
It's a show that not many people know about because it's only aired 10 nights in the last 3 years.
How many episodes are there?
There's 10 so far, and there's about to be 5 new ones.
10 quarter hours, 5 more to go.
There's technically 20, but we did musical reprises for the first 2 seasons.
Do you feel like nobody knows about Tender Touches?
I feel like only some people know about Tender Touches.
So we had, behind the scenes, we all had a meeting about this, and we're like, Tender Touches is a good show. People don't know that much about it. How do we get the word out?
Play it more than once on TV.
Has it only played once?
As far as I know, each episode is only played once. Because Mike Lazo always said, it's too smart for people, but he loves it.
Wow, what does that mean?
I don't know.
too smart for people, but he loves it.
Is it available on like Hulu and Amazon Prime and whatever? That's where people are. That's where the people
How come
are.
You don't know this?
I think it's on iTunes.
iTunes.
Don't we don't know.
Apple Store.
It's on the iTunes
you don't know?
Apple Store. Yeah, no one told us how to
I don't know.
Know
I never
like
tried
that.
Searching for it on Hulu.
I would say in some ways I feel Tender Touches part, you know, show I've co-created and I'm very proud with, but also feels almost extracurricular.
Whereas, what do you mean by that?
I feel like my main focus is on the live streaming shows, which Tender Touches sprouted out of, and then Tender Touches, this television program, almost feels like I do it in my off time almost.
I think that's the case for most of us. Like I have to like clear it with my boss, like, hey, I'm going to work on some Tender Touches stuff this week. I hope that's okay. Whereas my day job is like graphic designer for a website.
So I'll back up and say that Max, Lauren, and Dave, you guys all work in the same department, Adult Swim Digital.
Yes.
Came together working in this department on various projects, including the streams. So you all technically aren't here because you're a show creator, or I'm sorry, you aren't at Adult Swim because you're a show creator, like many people. You're at Adult Swim for different reasons.
Because
maybe
we
you
have
could
to
each
be.
Walk us through your reasons for being at the network. Lauren, go ahead.
Well, I interned at like five different places before I started at Adult Swim. I guess, yeah, Adult Swim was my final internship and I had just finished college. And that's the place where I was able to find employment.
Well, and you could have found employment at lots of places. McDonald's, the library.
Yeah, but I wasn't doing a McDonald's internship. I was doing an Adult Swim internship, which I chose. Okay. I don't know. That was like kind of always my end goal because I grew up in Atlanta and I always knew like Turner and Cartoon Network were around and within reach, theoretically. And I was going to school in New York and I preferred the idea of moving back home and living and working here. It's much cheaper and it was much less daunting than like trying to find a job in Manhattan after college.
And Lauren was one of the people who was just showed promise in vibing with us and we'd kept to just help us make things when we were building streams.
How do you get an internship at Adult Swim?
You either apply, you either throw your resume into a dark hole that is the like Turner Jobs site, or you meet somebody who introduces you to somebody else. Like I interned at Ogden Blick Studios, which did Super Jail and maybe some other Adult Swim content. And I kind of interned there with the ulterior motive of getting introduced to somebody at Adult Swim, which happened. They put me in touch with Tori Cook, who got me an interview with Vanessa Palacios. I don't know. I just felt that at a company like Adult Swim, where generally we don't do the animation work ourselves, you're more focused on the creative side and actually coming up with content like we do with the streams every day.
But with Ogden Blick, you were doing someone else's work.
Yes, that's generally how it works at an animation studio. Like somebody gives you characters and like style sheets and stuff, and you just recreate it according to their instructions.
It sounds like a good place to work for someone who without experience.
Yeah, it was great. I mean, like I did not study animation. I was a psychology major and I never had any art classes in college. And that was basically how I learned to animate. I told them like, yeah, I know how to use Flash. And they let me work there. I didn't know how to use Flash. I had to learn it like the first 2 days.
Oh my God, you lied?
You lied.
I lied.
Oh my God.
Weren't you afraid that you'd be caught?
Yes.
I hope Aaron Ogden Blick isn't listening to this right now.
How long did it take you to learn Flash?
A few days. It's not that hard. The hard part, I guess, is knowing how to draw and knowing how to do in-betweens. So I had imposter syndrome, and I was literally an imposter.
What name did you use?
Fred Durst.
Did you have anxiety leaving a psychology degree to pursue suddenly learning Flash in 5 days and completely changing your direction of your life?
No, not really. I've been drawing my whole life. I've been drawing on computers since I was like 4 or 5 years old. And I, throughout my college career, I had a bunch of internships just in various media outlets. Like I interned at the New York Observer, at Comedy Central, and a local PBS station in Atlanta, and then Augenblick before going to Adult Swim. So I wasn't like, I guess that was kind of my education in illustration and animation and video work in general.
Psychology goes out the window, though.
Yeah, I mean, the hardest part really was just having to justify and explain to interviewers why I was a psychology major.
You a psychology major?
I just went to a liberal arts college, and my end goal was just to get a degree, because you need a degree to get most white-collar jobs nowadays. And also, it's the way you get an internship. Like, even just, like, enrolling, even if you just want to, like, get an internship at Adult Swim, you have to at least be enrolled in, like, a class at a community college to do it. You have to be in some kind of, like, accredited education program.
Do you want to shout out your college?
Barnard College. It's a women's college in New York. So I went from a place that was like 90% ladies to a place that was like 80% dudes.
And me.
Adult Swim.
Yeah.
You actually interviewed in New York with Keith Crawford in the building I was working at Thing X.
Yes, that's actually how Max and I met. I didn't
remember.
Yes, it is true. I was in New York, and it was I was trying to interview for an internship in Atlanta. And I was like, well, I can fly down for spring break, I guess. But then Keith was like, well, I'm going to be in New York anyway. So just come to Thing X, which was, I guess, the digital branch of Adult Swim at the time. And I went in the building. I was very lost, and I entered. And I think a guy like wearing shorts and sandals was near the entrance. And I said, hey, I'm here for an internship. And I think that was Max who told me where to go.
So you were in contact with Keith Crawford.
Well, for some reason, that's the guy. Yeah, for some reason, that's the guy you interview with for a production internship at Adult Swim. They take you to the senior vice president of the whole network.
Right.
Lauren, when you talk about all this, it makes me sad for some reason.
Why?
I feel like I've wanted to cry this whole time.
Why?
I don't know.
Why? It's so it's complete.
It's beautiful.
Lauren has such a pedigree of Comedy Central, Augenblick, like fine
Observer
outlets. You know where I interned? Professional Photography Services in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania.
Yeah,
Banyan Productions, garbage companies.
Yeah, I think that Dave's story is much more impressive. He came out of nothing. Rags to riches.
Dave's a fucking moron, and he's still managing somehow.
Yeah, I was born with a silver spoon in my mouth.
I come from a family of cops.
Who said, cartoons, get out of here. They don't like drawings in his family. They think it's too fake.
Yeah. He learned how to fire a gun by the time he was 4.
Dave, how'd you get hooked up with the network? Did you have to meet with Keith also? Did you come through the security department?
Well, I did actually interviewed with Keith Crawford way back in 2005. Well, 2005, I moved to Atlanta. My girlfriend at the time got a job at Cartoon Network. We both lived in Philadelphia. She moved to Atlanta. I followed her down. I met some of her friends that worked at Cartoon Network. We broke up 3 months after I moved to Atlanta. I was alone and listless in a town I did not know. And then suddenly I got a call from Adult Swim. I applied for a job, and I got an interview, and I interviewed with Keith Crawford. I didn't know really much at all about Adult Swim. I distinctly remember saying that I liked the show Aqua Lab.
You lied also.
A little bit of an imposter. I did not get the job.
Oh, man.
Oh, wow. What was the job?
It was the tape librarian.
For Aqualab.
Dana Swanson ended up getting the job. I did not get the job.
Imagine if you were the voice of Toonami.
Yeah.
Dave was Sarah. Oh, here's anime, doctor.
So a few months later, let's say like February 2006, I got an email from Liz Mackey, who I met through my ex-girlfriend. Liz Mackey says there's a position open at CartoonNetwork.com. I interviewed for that, and I got that job. And
what was that job?
That was a production assistant for Cartoon Network New Media. So I was working for both CartoonNetwork.com and AdultSwim.com. And there was some turbulence back then. I think something happened. I think Lazo ended up taking AdultSwim.com back from Cartoon Network New Media. There was some sort of shakeup.
Right.
And then I ended up being solely at CartoonNetwork.com for a minute. But then I got poached by someone at Adult Swim, and then I got hired full-time January 1st, 2007.
Why were you poached, do you think?
Because I remember Karen, who she said, technically I shouldn't be asking you to work here because that's poaching.
Well, Dave, people are saying calling someone a Karen's kind of derogatory these days.
No, her name is Karen.
Oh.
That was before the slang. And then my other boss, Chad.
Who?
I'm just
wow.
Wow.
And then so really, though, time progressed, but I was thought of for my first job by Liz Mackey, who I worked with for many years. Liz Mackey left Cartoon Network, but is now a producer at the animation company Awesome Incorporated that makes Tender Touches.
And Aqualab.
Full circle.
Yeah, little bit of a chill ran down my spine as soon as I said it. I'm like, that's not right, is it? That's not right. Keith didn't even flinch, though.
He was probably three white mules in or something like that.
Max, when you were in New York, do you have a meeting with Keith?
I never knew Keith existed till I moved down here.
How did you get your job?
ThingX was pretty far removed from the rest of Adult Swim, right?
ThingX was pretty far removed. I kind of knew about Lazo and more about Harrigan. I knew Sean Moore back when he was in Peter Karpik's position. And I knew Liz Mackey and Dave. I knew Dave before I realized I knew Dave. Because he helped me deliver TV files from Final Cut Pro, back when we edited in Final Cut Pro.
You started working at ThingX in New York. And what was your job there?
I had an internship at The Onion doing graphics that I got. I didn't know if I'd even get that. I had moved to New York. I was like, I might as well be around things and try and do stand-up and stuff, because I decided now I'm into comedy, now that I'm 22, that I'd always been into it. And now I'm going to try doing it. I was staying at friends' houses, and I was just like, I'll apply for this Onion internship, and I got it. And the Onion internship led to them asking me if I wanted to help a few former Onion employees who are not moving to Chicago with the company to be a part of a thing that eventually was called ThingX, and I was the post-production assistant. But I think it turned out pretty quickly that I was also the best intermediary between like editing and motion graphics, like having a hand in both. So I was kind of finishing a lot of videos and putting things together, and also working late hours and getting videos online that maybe got views or not, who knows. But it was a good experience.
ThingX at the time was trying to bring, like you said, the Onion people print, right, into the Adult Swim video world.
Yeah.
Was that the task?
A lot of the ideas felt kind of similar to Clickhole in some ways, too, what eventually Clickhole became. And I was making a lot of people's ideas until there was decisions to change that, and Matt Harrigan was walking around. But then Matt Harrigan liked the things I was making with Joe Randazzo, maybe.
You were taking a lot of the print ideas and visualizing them.
Kind of. I mean, I don't know. They were trying to like be producing things themselves, and I don't know. They were very wordy. But they weren't really like Onion News articles. I don't know. It's hard to say.
But specifically, you had some sort of, technically, in quotes, animation ability.
I was pretty good at quick. I was pretty quick at editing and pretty quick at using programs, and I learned quickly.
So long story short, you three end up in Atlanta working for Adult Swim Digital.
AdultSwim.com. And Lauren was, at the time, making lots of graphics with me, It was before the digital department had as many shows as it ended up doing. Like, we gradually were just tacking more and more our people and being, like, spread out and spread thin. But at that point, Lauren had more time just to do stuff for me, and I was focusing more on Fish Center and the Crossword Show before it was called Crosswords. And Dave had this idea to do a soap opera on the Crossword Show, like a radio play. And we had someone call in named Bradley Milner, and we improvised a soap opera scene.
He just happened to call in.
We said the next person.
Call in.
I said it was me or you said next person who calls in is in the show, and they're your wife or something like that. And then I remember Lazo said he liked listening to it because he's been a big fan of Blood Feast. And I will say the development team on the West Coast, a few of them, huge fans of Tender Touches. The people inside the building like the show more than they put it on TV. I don't know why. But he was like, you should animate it. So I was like, Lauren, let's get on that now. And what, you and I animated it? You drew all the characters and decided the character design style and color palette, and I was scribbling backgrounds and cobbling your poses together in After Effects just to prove that we could make a show out of it?
Yeah, I was drawing vector images in Flash and exporting them for you to, like, I don't know, integrate into your After Effects files.
How often were you doing the live streaming soap opera?
I think he only really loved the first one. We kept doing it, but we only really used the first one.
It was a segment that we did repeatedly for at least 2 or 3 months, I feel like.
Yeah, but we only used the first and second
one. Before he said anything?
Well, I think he had said, I don't know when he said something.
Well, I feel like he must, I think he said something early on, and I remember he said, I really like the property, brothers. And we're like, oh, no, it's called Two Brother.
Yeah, so we should define the central conceit of the show at first was that it's a soap opera. So I think a common theme in the show is family issues and relationship drama. But Dave improvised from a frame of reference of the mundane and realty, which I think is very Dave Bonowitz. So it just kind of became canon that the characters, or at least his character, was involved in real estate. Because he would talk, I'm dying and I'm talking about the floor, and he's mentioning they're heated because it was a renovation project. That was like one of the big jokes in the first episode. What brought the house down.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember it was just purely audio in the beginning, and I was just sitting and listening to it to decide how it would look. And I remember crying, laughing, thinking...
Wow.
I didn't know you cried. It was the part where, like, I think Curtis was stabbing Steve, and you were saying that he would never see his wife's perfect little pussy ever again.
Which we had to change.
But we had to change. But that was, like, my favorite line in the whole thing.
We changed pussy to pistachio pie.
Because Lazo hates the word pussy. A lot of things are going to change now that Lazo's gone. We're going to say pussy
we're saying
more
pussy
on the air.
Now. Pussy grabs back.
I don't think Lazo likes the word pussy, but everyone knew he was a virgin and very scared of women.
You know, he gave me trouble for that word when we were doing assy.
Yeah? You wanted to call it pussy first? The crime-fighting vulva.
So you were doing this for 2 or 3 weeks?
We did it for months. And it was always bad. And then I think,
except for the first one. The first one was good.
First
which is
one
why
was
we
good, and then the
it.
Second one was half good.
Yeah.
And then it just progressed.
Well, it got worse
because we could
I think
never
there was
remember
like a court
anything.
Scene, and then we were dead. Yeah. And the whole idea, the joke, just became, oh, it's us arguing about what happened, which is sometimes fun, but it got redundant. And I think that's obvious in the show too, that it's been driven by different motivating factors. I mean, I think especially at the beginning.
I don't think anything's obvious in the show.
I think Dave will argue, maybe Lauren too, that I'm the only one who ever completely understood the first season. And I think it's partly because, Dave, you even said it earlier, you've seen it as an extracurricular. And to me, I was really like, this is a big opportunity I really want to take advantage of. So I was kind of pushing through just making it to prove we could make it.
Yeah, I remember we were all at a picnic in Freedom Park, and Max showed up, and he was talking about his idea for, like, the town to be powered by Curtis's sadness, which was, like, getting pumped out of his neck in the form of some weird pink juice. And Dave and I were like, yeah, sure.
Max, do you feel like you were championing this before these guys?
I don't know if I was championing it more than them, but I felt like I was less afraid to push it because I wanted to if they gave us one little, I thought it was a slippery slope to more opportunities. Well, and it's allowed the show to grow and get better and prove we could do it cheap.
It was a slippery slope because I think the fact that it became a show was Mike's idea. Mike said, make it a cartoon.
Mm-hmm.
You guys made it. I was out of town. I remember being on an airplane and Lauren emailed me the drawing of Curtis. And it captured my essence, which I was very happy about.
Thank you.
And then,
did you have an erection in the plane?
No, I didn't get a boner. Sometimes I do get boners on planes, but I think it's just from the engine vibrating. If I sit in the right seat.
Do you guys feel if you fart more on airplanes?
Yeah, but I think that's air pressure and stuff.
I feel like I keep little quiet toots keep coming out.
I mean, my shoes often start to feel too small when I'm on a plane and I take them off.
Creepy.
Yeah, that's weird.
Max, you said these guys were afraid of starting up a show?
Well,
I think I'm more entitled sometimes.
Max is
for better
more entitled.
Or for worse.
Yes.
But in ways that are sometimes I want to do this, I want to do this, and I even no matter what happens, I want to do it.
Also, though, the first episode of Tender Touches was make the cartoon and we'll see if we want to put it on air. Make one. And then
1 11-minute cartoon.
Right. And then it turned into, I like this. Mike said, I like it. Maybe we'll put it on at 4 a.m. And then that turned into make a few more. And then
we'll put it on at midnight after Rick and Morty or something.
Yeah. But then it turned into make it again but change it a little bit, which is why we did the musicals.
Yeah.
What do you mean change?
Well, he said he wanted us to air a reprisal or whatever immediately after each episode. Like it would be episode 102 coming on at 11:30, and then the exact same episode would come on at midnight, except the audio is different. The characters were singing.
Or 11:45.
Yeah, whatever.
Well, at first the idea was
Back it up. You said one cartoon. He said put it on at 4 in the morning. How did it do?
Oh, I don't think it never aired at that point.
He saw it there and said make a few more, and it kind of turned into, okay, we're going to air it over 1 week. And he said we could put it on after Rick and Morty because Lazo was really into parts of the streams he's been super into, and Fish Center and Blood Feast, and luckily Dave and I was something I think he really vibed with and wanted to showcase it as much as he could without feeling like it was just annoying, I think. Or I don't know. He wanted to take a little risk on it. So he's like, we're going to put it after Rick and Morty. But he also knew we had to fill 30 minutes, so we had to put a reprise right afterwards. And the original idea – I think I asked you if we could do, Dave, was to have Miley Cyrus play Bradley's character.
Yeah.
But somehow it turned into 2 or 3 weeks before air, Dave and I in one of our streaming studios making music that we sang over every scene.
We hammered out 55 minutes of music in a weekend.
So how many episodes was that?
It was 5. So each
it was
night,
five.
Monday through Friday. An episode followed by the musical version, which we hastily made in 2 weeks before it was due to air.
And then a year or year and a half later, there was another 5, which also had musical versions.
I think one of our saving graces was and the fact that I don't know if we would have even been considered if it weren't for the fact that we were able to animate everything, the whole pilot in-house. I feel like a lot of shows are much more of a risk to make if they have to hire a whole studio to make a pilot.
Walk us through the animation process for the first batch.
So Lauren designed characters.
I designed the characters and then I drew all of their final poses and mouth flap and everything in Flash, exported a bunch of SWF files and gave them to Max, who put it all together in After Effects.
I had interns working on mouth flap while I was on Fish Center. They would continue the work where I left off. They would go on my computer and match them out.
Yeah, that's something you love to do. You tell an intern to get on your computer while
you're on my computer,
away.
Do the lip flap while I'm doing something else.
But they could look at your
just
email
to be efficient because I really wanted to see it. It was really exciting, and it was just I don't know, the first episode's only 3 scenes, 3 characters.
Yeah, I mean, it's an easy show to animate. It's primarily dialogue with a little bit of physical comedy.
All the audio that takes place in that first episode was all live straight from the Blood Feast live stream with only edits to the word pussy.
Which was an issue later on, like with some of the music used in the background.
Music
you had to like find
issue.
A way. Yeah, you had to find a way to like cut out music from like one baked in.
We
audio
bought a
file.
YouTube piano song from a guy.
Yeah, like some
that guy. That I had played.
Yeah,
like an idiot.
Wasn't a guy in Korea or something.
Yeah.
But then we hired an animator, Ed Jacoby, who basically did the rest of the episodes, four more episodes. And it probably the lowest budget show in Adult Swim's history, which I feel like is saying a lot.
Yeah.
I feel like has to be.
It was like what, $40,000 or $50,000 for five episodes? It was not much.
I have no idea, but it was just not a lot. But the next four episodes we ended up recording in our live stream studio with everyone sitting in a room together with these headset mics that we're wearing now.
Which is still the vibe we do now.
Still the vibe we do now, but it is a show that comes out of confusion and sort of just bickering and...
And I think non-actors, and are not really trying to be super funny, people who kind of come from a different instinct than just like straight comedy or acting,
A lot of people that we work with, some employees of Adult Swim, some employees of... I mean, we have Jazz, who was she worked in the cantina. This season, we have Ned, who cares for the fish tank. People that are just around that are kind of unique.
Dean Shepherd, our project manager.
Yeah, just people who
she plays our mother.
Aren't necessarily actors or even know they're going to be on a TV show that day.
Why do you think people don't use more non-actors in animated shows? How do you get away with using non-actors?
I think cartoons have a history of people with like well-honed instrument voices that can do a lot of different voices, and they have a history of like a lot of exaggeration. And building on that, I think after the 90s, especially after Disney realized how much money they could make advertising that Robin Williams was in Aladdin, there's also like been celebrities have been a big part or brand name recognition. I mean, even Smiling Friends has that guy from Mike from Red Letter Media. That was like a big draw to when the pilot was airing. Whoa, it's that guy.
Yeah, it's like people like a fun, voices. Easy, well-paying gig for a lot of actors. Like you just show up in your sweatpants in a room and do some records and then you leave.
And I don't think like until really Dr. Katz, but maybe even arguably Home Movies, Space Ghost, Aqua Teen, there weren't really many understated cartoon performances.
I think in many ways, people who aren't actors can provide better acting than somebody who's really trying to imbue lines with emotion. Like people stumble over their words a lot and I don't know, or just deliver more awkward, realistic lines, I think.
And that's why I've always argued with Dave that Tender Touches is evocative of the mumblecore movement.
Yes. I feel like we're seeing a lot of that. Like there are bits of Rick and Morty that are totally improvised and done ad lib. And I'm seeing it also in the Netflix show Midnight Gospel. And
well, that's just interviews, right? I don't know. I haven't watched it yet.
I mean, yeah, it's recorded ad lib. And I don't know. I like the idea of lines and bits like, I don't know, like people deciding for themselves what part of a show is funny as opposed to something like SNL where it's like, very curated and they decide for you like what is funny and when to laugh.
I mean, Tender Touches definitely has, you know, feels a lot different than something like, you know, Venture Brothers or something where it's, I'm sure Venture Brothers probably carefully written. Our show is not carefully written. And I think, you know,
But it's more carefully edited. Like we're trying
it's
to
carefully
find
edited.
Moments
well, that's,
and moods
I mean,
and vibes.
It's definitely... The discovery and the editing that where we write the show and the editing, that's certainly sculpted a bit more.
Some people would say that's the hallmark of a lot of Adult Swim shows, that they're made in the edit.
For sure.
Yeah, I mean, Tender Touches 100%. And I think, you know, a lot of things that I work on, I think the excitement is making something and then figuring out what it is later.
And I think we have the liberty, especially with smaller budget projects and just not being a network where you've got a huge writer's room, where you've got to decide five drafts in what it is beforehand, and then people are kind of married to it after, like, the executives have sat in and saw what the episode, or listened to what the episode's going to be with a table read. Like, we don't have any of that. And I'm imagining for Space Ghost, even if you guys had table reads, you were open to it changing a lot by the end, right? You were in a, you had a position where you could just, especially since it started as, like, what the, how would I explain it? Like, it wasn't really a show at first, right, Matt? It was kind of just on.
Space Ghost is an example of a show that was carefully scripted and then wildly abandoned. Each of you has a diversity of abilities, and to be able to bring all of those to bear on a common project means you can do a lot of the stuff yourself.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, if Max or Dave wants a visual change, I can do that. If we want a line to be delivered or edited differently, we go to Max, I guess. And if we want sweetening or specific sound effects, we go to Dave.
But I will say, Awesome Inc. is doing amazing this season, has kind of brought all the ideas to life with our notes after just hammering radio plays.
You guys have established a template of what the show is supposed to be, and now you bring it to a company who can replicate those processes.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think they just, you know, they, I mean, they're good at what they do, and they interpret the radio plays that we give them. And
it still hinges on Max and Dave putting together the radio plays and then ultimately doing the final sound edits. Awesome is mostly, I guess, tasked with storyboarding and then doing visual edits and animations.
How about this line from a review of the show? If the streams are a potential water well for new and upcoming talent like Dave Bonowitz and Maxime Simonet as an avenue to give us content like Tender Touches, then I could be a buyer for that aspect.
Hell yeah.
Nice.
Lauren, you were excluded from that. What's it like to be a woman in this process?
I don't know. It is weird. Sometimes I do get imposter syndrome, and I just assume that I was added, I don't know, as like an honorary thing or like a token or something. But then at the same time, I'll like go into the writer's room to get some candy at work, and I'll look at the slate of upcoming shows, and it'll show all the names of the shows and then all their creators, and it'll just say Tender Touches, Max and Dave. And then I'll like angrily write my name under it too.
Who printed that out where it just said?
I don't know, an intern.
It's probably
some sexist intern. I mean, I don't feel like it's I wish you wouldn't have to have imposter syndrome, because literally it was me, Lauren, and Dave. We made the first episode.
But really, I mean, really,
like, that's what
creators
are.
But usually you don't see, like, I don't know, the art director listed as like one of the co-creators of a show. Like, I feel
like sometimes, you know, like with Super Jail, like Christy created the show and he also draws it. We just happened to like come at it from two different angles, and your voice and sensibilities also craft the show to be something. I mean, it's so obvious when I do something alone that it's very different than if I did it with you or with Dave. You know,
right.
completely changes the show.
I was also barely involved in that first episode, I feel like.
Right.
I mean, you know, my voice was in there, but, you know.
It is a good feeling, I don't know, I guess, to be one of the few female show creators on an animated series, but I just want to see more of it, I guess. I don't want to be like the single torchbearer. Like, I want there to be plenty of people. I don't want it to be
a big
deal.
Well, a lot of people told me that you're enough, though, Lauren.
That I'm enough?
Yeah, that you're enough. We're done now.
One of the hardest things for an animated show to do is to have a singular style. I think a lot of people would say Tender Touches has an immediately recognizable style.
Thank you. That's nice to hear. I feel like, I don't know, with the blue line work, I wanted the show to have its own visual hook, I suppose. Like, with Rick and Morty, the characters, like, their eyes are all, like, asterisks. And then in The Simpsons, the character's skin, if they're white, they're all yellow. And then, I don't know, I liked the idea of a show having line work that just wasn't black.
It's funny, too, how, you know, sometimes we had the animation studio do a character design. And we'll get the design back and we'll say, wow, it looks like Family Guy. Why does it look like Family Guy? And it's just like a line drawn on the eyelid or something. But somehow the Tender Touches look doesn't look like other shows.
What were the decisions that went into the style of the show?
I don't know. Like I did it so long ago. This was back in like 2016 when I was making these decisions. And I knew that I just wanted it to be simple and have a really simple color palette. I definitely drew some inspiration from Mission Hill in terms of color palette. Maybe The Simpsons in terms of character design. And we knew going in that we were going to do a low frame rate. Like, instead of having smooth, fluid animation from one pose to the next, it just jumps. And we did that as a cost-saving measure. And at this point, I don't know how necessary that is, but I still like to do it.
I will say we are still very low budget, at least this season.
Yeah.
The fact we're getting as much as we are getting is sweet and generous from the people at the animation company that you said are thankless and work late hours.
Yeah.
I just want to let the viewers know it's less than $10 million an episode. So that puts things in perspective.
Do you feel competitive with other animated shows?
Maybe in terms of like marketing and packaging and promotion, I feel competitive. Like not in terms of quality.
I mean, I feel like we're making our own little thing, and I don't really feel competitive creatively with other shows.
Yeah, I felt more and more confident with Tender Touches as the years gone on. If anything, that I feel like I want to occupy a space in people's minds, because I do think some people find it and really enjoy it. And when the first On the Green showing of the first episode in Atlanta, like there was a lot of laughs, I think it's a funny show. I'm a very insecure person who also has imposter syndrome, and I'm pretty confident in Tender Touches as being a thing that if you like it, it's not like full of flaws. You know what I mean? Like there's something to like there.
Yeah, I don't feel terribly inadequate compared to other animated series, especially knowing that we have much less to work with.
Do you feel like a bigger budget would improve the show?
I don't think so. Maybe in terms of just like the amount of shows that we're able to do in one season, but I don't think that it would affect the quality of the comedy or anything. Maybe if we were able to get like bigger actors or something, or more like big name actors.
Robin Williams.
Our biggest celebrity is
Robin Williams.
Yeah.
Yeah. Robin Williams and just essentially everyone who worked on Aladdin.
You have a character literally phoning in. That must have been a significant decision.
Yeah, and I feel like
it confuses
years
people.
Years later, it wasn't something I considered too much. Due to the fact that we had a caller act with us when we did the original Two Brother segment of Blood Feast, the caller Bradley Milner, who is a boisterous young man from Queens, New York, and Bradley called into Blood Feast quite often, and would call in to do the Two Brother segment on Blood Feast every single week. He'd be the only guy who ever remembered what was going on. He has sort of an incredibly photographic memory for minutia, perhaps.
Perhaps.
He would definitely like stop us in the middle of Tender Touches records to tell us that like we were lifting ideas from like some episode from like season 3 of the Cleveland show, and to where we'd have to like stop the record and like,
yeah, where we all debate about that and find out he was wrong. But it's like a big scene in the second season. And there's a lot of cool things you can do just with the nature of the records, but even more so with someone who's not even in the room with you. Where like in the second season, he plays a woman, and I was having him like moan against hot tub bubbles. And then I started accusing him being a sexist, and he's asking me on the phone not to put that in the show.
We do.
We really give the guy a hard time. Like there was a point
sort of psychologically torture him a little.
Yeah.
Bit.
There was a point in the third season where we were trying to trick him into thinking he was fired and that we were done with him. And it was like the first episode of the whole season.
Which is like the plateau of like what you can do.
Yeah.
But at the same time, he's laughing. But due to the fact that he was on the phone for that first episode and he was a major character, we said, well, we'll just have him on the phone for every episode. It was a decision I don't think we thought about too much. It just seemed right for what we were doing.
But it's one of those things that's hard to grasp, maybe for a newcomer. Maybe. I think some people, they wouldn't question it and be like, well, that's weird.
I mean, I definitely.
But some people are like, is the sound bad?
Yeah, I definitely saw
But I don't think it's a flaw.
It's not a. It's a decision, I think. But the fact.
Yeah, I think it's funny when people think that like that was the best we could do. Like the Bradley sound quality was just a mistake on our part.
Well, someone on Twitter did ask why the sound was bad, which now, you know, 3 years later, I'm like, all right, maybe we shouldn't have put someone on the phone.
There are little inaccessible things like that. I mean, in general, and it's similar, I think, to some of the Golden Age Adult Swim content. I remember seeing a comment somewhere that was like, this show doesn't have any punchlines.
They said that about older Adult Swim
about
shows
tender
or Tender Touches.
Which I think is, but I don't see that as a flaw either. Like, I can't be insecure about it because like I said earlier, I think the show is what it is.
I mean,
and clearly what it is.
Yeah. Know? And
I think it is successfully what it wants to be.
It definitely, I mean, season three, as I said the other day, definitely taking things to a higher step, has episodes where there's A and B stories, whereas in previous seasons, I don't think we focused on B stories. So at least...
Well, the first two seasons, I think, were more of an homage to an idea of like just a continuous soap opera narrative
a
that
saga.
Just keeps going and it happens over 1 week. But I think something I think our network does... And I've been really into anthology series in general because I like when shows don't go on forever. Changing up things is nice. And like the end of this season changes things up a lot.
How did you script this new batch compared to the earlier batches?
We had a group of creative consultants. After Lauren, Dave, and I met up with some ideas we had, where I'd be like, let's go to this room. And we wrote ideas on a wall. And then we kind of each took a pass at an outline. And then we'd like kind of give notes on each other and redo them. Then we brought in a group of people that had worked with me on Machu Picchu, Dave's wife, people in the office, just a lot of Dave's family and friends and old girlfriends, just everyone Dave knows. And got a lot of questions about clarity, joke punch-ups, just notes we took, notes to take into the record to be like, well, let's try this line.
I think having additional consultants, as we're calling them, I think that really helped us see the story from a different perspective and sort, you know, a lot of things. There is a little bit of a spoiler, but there is a chip clip in season three that becomes like a key element of the show. And that came, Ji Young said that we had this promotional chip clip at the house that she thought was funny because it was a promotional chip clip for a real estate agent. And that a chip clip promotion for a real estate agent became a key part of Tender Touches. So it was good to have people to bounce ideas off of. And
non-writers. In other words, selecting some consultants in the same way you select voices.
I think people we work with...
I think everyone was comedically minded.
Yeah, people we work with that we think are funny. And
and it's definitely a mixture. Like, Taishi is an actor. But we also had people in the writers' rooms who are writers, like Chris Arison, who's a writer for AdultSwim.com.
Who are some of the guests you've involved in the show? Bradley Milner, obviously.
Right.
This season, we have a few other people who call into Fish Center and stuff who all play the family of Bradley's character, which is probably what led to that sound quality comment because...
Yeah, it was a whole scene full of people.
I was in Quebec and I was writing down ideas for the third season. I was like, well, it should be the whole family. And they all sound like on their phone. And it makes Dave's character, Curtis, really annoyed because they just sound so annoying.
Who are some of the other notable voices you're able to get now?
This season, most notable, I think, is Taishi Tamaki, who was on Terrace House, which I'm a huge fan of Terrace House. And
It's insane to me that you went from like watching Terrace House on your couch to like going to Fritty and eating pizza with Taishi.
Yeah, it's awesome. But he lives in L.A. and he's an actor. And again, I think that was my wife's idea to reach out to Taishi. But he came out to Atlanta and we recorded a few episodes with him.
All the best ideas come from Ji Young.
Real, I mean, that's how I live my life.
Yeah.
We also have Michelle Firestone, who a long time, we've known Michelle for a long time through like Fish Center and stuff. But Michelle flew to Atlanta to reprise her character. And then a bunch of people from around the office and people that, you know. And then Daniel is played by Chelsea Thomas, who
is a local bug woman.
And
she works for the Atlanta Botanical Garden. I think she's like an educator of some sort. She's an expert on like insects. And we, because Max wanted a large segment of season three to be dedicated to his character's new obsession with caring for insects, he wanted to include like a local consultant, I suppose, to be a voice actor on the show.
But Chelsea, seemingly obsessed with bugs and an expert of bugs, not at all a cartoon voice actor, but somehow in the show, I think it seems like as if it were an actor with facts about bugs written for them to say. I don't know how.
And that's just how she talks in real life. If you meet her at a party, she'll just start spewing off information about larvae.
But Chelsea, though, we never auditioned Chelsea and said, oh, do you have a good cartoon voice? It was just like, oh, you know a lot about bugs. You're going to be in our show.
Are people confused by that? Are they wanting to come in and do a cartoony voice?
I don't know. Maybe it's once they sit down and they hear us talk and maybe they see that we're just kind of talking in our regular voices and stuff. I think the only person that doesn't really get that sometimes is Bradley. Bradley,
which is why he's good.
Yeah, which
well, I think it's partly because he's not physically in the room with us.
Right. Bradley,
I think
can't
he would
see.
Tone it down if he were in the room with us.
Yeah.
Has anyone said no?
I don't.
We haven't really reached out to many people.
I feel like we're at a 100% success rate.
Yeah. So I've had some like, ooh, it'd be great to get this person. But then it's like, we'd have to get them here. Yeah, try to get Yao Ming, but you have to fly the people here.
Well, we did
Though
that.
I do think, like, it's coming to a point where it's cusping. It feels like, you know, we're actually doing a little bit more PR and marketing this season. And we might put together a pitch document for a longer fourth season. I feel like it could get the attention. And instead of just feeling like, oh, this is a side streams project, it feels sustainable and like there's more to do with the vibe of the show without it feeling redundant.
Have you had some reactions to it that have made an impression on you?
Everyone says that Curtis's character looks, that Dave's character looks like Griffin McElroy. And I have to say, that was never intentional. I didn't even know who that was until after
that?
People.
But
it's a guy who works in podcasts.
Yeah, he works.
My brother and me.
I think people say in real life, though, I look like that guy, too.
Yeah.
On Twitter, someone said people refer to it as podcast the show, which immediately I was like, well, that's kind of a little bit of an insult.
I'm like weirdly okay with that.
But then I thought about it and I'm like, well, it's not. And also, Curtis in season three has a podcast. So it was probably the most astute comment that they could possibly make.
And it's recorded similarly to a podcast,
Maybe it is just the way our voices sound on these microphones.
True.
And the way the banter is, you know, people talking over each other and people saying or gathering their thoughts or.
But I don't think it's gotten enough exposure to see people like really have profound reactions to it yet.
Yeah, I mean, if I want to find feedback about Tender Touches, I have to go on twitter.com and like look up hashtag Tender Touches the night it airs.
And
or
then,
go to bubbleblabber.com.
Otherwise, it's just like weird porn and massage tweets.
Yeah, or little animal sculptures.
I sense some frustration.
I think there's...
Optimism. I'm a
frustration
for the future of it.
I think that I feel more of a growing frustration with like television as a medium. Like, I don't think that's really the best way to reach a wide audience anymore. I don't think that I feel like most people don't watch Rick and Morty like live on television using Comcast or whatever. They do it like on Hulu or they torrent it or whatever.
And I'm not good with outreach. I'm also annoying. I don't know anything about marketing or getting a following.
I think partly like Game Set is doing well because like it's a 6-hour thing and it's on YouTube. Like, do we have like every episode?
Well,
of
also
Tender
re-aired
on
TV way more than Tender Touches ever did.
I think Tender Touches is a bit more modest than Game Set.
True.
Tender Touches didn't have a release party.
We should have a release party this
Yeah, morning. We never had a release party.
Well, you know what we've been doing, Matt?
We're not going to have a release party because we're all going to be in our homes. We're going to have a Zoom
We just went to Dave's house the last two times and watched the first episode.
Yeah, like, we went and watched the episode and then ate some like mozzarella sticks or something.
And then Max and then left before it was even over.
Yeah, he got sleepy and left.
Give some advice to people who might want to do what you guys have achieved.
Work for people that trust you.
Yeah, and take advantage of opportunities and make proofs of concepts. I think it's really nice to make things you like. Like, even if this has been a low impact show in terms of just how much it's been pushed out there, it's really nice for the audience that does like it, that gets it, to make something that is personal to all of us in our own ways. And it happened, I will insist, partly because we just made it after being told we should try and make it. Instead of, it wasn't mired in development, you know, it just became what it was and was just
We never made a show Bible, which maybe you only make that if you have to pitch.
We made a show Bible.
Oh, okay. I don't know. See?
I gave it to the animation studio.
I put mine in a motel after I had sex.
I don't even know what a show Bible is.
But yeah, I think that a lot of the time, like, producing a show isn't about like going to an executive and asking permission. You just kind of put pencil to paper and just make the thing and then show it to people. And if they like it, then people will share it with their friends and talk about it.
I will say, this is kind of bouncing back to a previous question, but was there anything that someone said that whatever left an impact on you about the show? When the first season aired, I believe it was someone that worked at Turner Studios, but they tweeted that one of the biggest inside jokes in Cartoon Network history is about to air, referring to Tender Touches. He referred to the show as an inside joke.
Wow, that was a Turner employee that
said that? I believe so, yeah.
Wow, I didn't know that. I thought it was just a stranger.
Which, you know, it's too smart for them, like Mike Lazo.
No, but I think it's the fact that it could be perceived as an inside joke is very interesting. I think we are, the show, if this show were pitched to Adult Swim, there's no way Adult Swim would say, we trust you. But we were in a position where we were able to make this unique thing, and we had fearless bosses that said, yeah, make it. And maybe there is a little bit of, you know, our unique talents combining like some sort of mumblecore Voltron. But, you know, the show is its own unique thing.
Even though, like, you can call it an inside joke, I don't think our anti-humor, if you call it that, or mumbling, I don't feel like it's lofty and pretentious. And I think we're trying to make a show that's also, it's not really full of referential humor or anything. Like, I think there's genuine, there's a lot of character drama and situations. Like, I don't think there's like kind of like we're smarter than the audience or anything like that. It is putting just us butting heads together on a real primal level.
When I hear the phrase inside joke, I don't think of something being too like erudite or esoteric. I think that like I imagine a group of people laughing about something and it's only funny to them. And if they,
it's like, yeah, they're a little too cool for school, but I don't think
maybe it was the musical thing that was the inside joke. I don't know. Either way, that sort of left an impact on me.
I just look for commentary about the way the show looks.
Yeah. I like improv stuff.
I'm not good at improvising at all. I don't mind, like, I enjoy reading lines from a pre-written script, but if I'm put in a room and told be funny, it freaks me out.
I don't really like improv comedy, but I like improv drama.
Oh. Yeah.
That's what this show is.
The show is an improv drama.
Promote your show again. This may be the only promotion you get.
Oh, fuck.
Is that a threat?
Well, this show, Tender Touches, is an improvised soap opera. It's improvised drama. There's family drama. It's the humor lacks punchlines and is vibey and mumbly and bickering. If you like podcasts but wish they were animated and also were too cool for school, this show's for you. Fuck off if you don't like it. I have a house. I have a condo.
I also have a condo.
I have a townhouse. I have three floors.
Okay.
If you want to make a TV show, you need real estate. You need to invest in real estate.
If you haven't seen it, check out adultswim.com/what? Just / Tender Touches?
Yes.
I think it's a fun show. I'm proud of it.
Just Google Tender Touches and type it in Google.
Who invented the phrase Tender Touches? Because that Tender Touches...
Well, that was like a phrase. That was like a segment on the Crosswords show where like people would call in and say nice things to each other.
Because Dave and
right?
I argue very naturally on the air.
I feel like that's a common thread running through some shows. Like I know like on the old version of SMB, like they'd have to stop and like give compliments to each other in the middle of the show because it got too
that's
angry.
Essentially what Tender Touches was, yeah.
You guys want to hang out for the conclusion of the podcast?
I have to go to this other meeting.
All right,
we have a 1 o'clock meeting.
My schedule's
30
wide
seconds
open.
Long. Visit adultswim.com or download the Adult Swim app to watch Tender Touches and some of the things that you guys were just telling everyone about. It's free. Roku, Amazon Fire, Apple TV, Android, iOS. Watch our live streams like Blood Feast, Stupid Morning Bullshit, Last Stream on the Left, Truth Point, As Seen on Adult Swim, and of course, Fish Center. Music from today's episode is from our pal Dom, his song, Living in America.
I like that song.
Me too.
Thanks to Christina Loringer for putting this podcast together. Thanks, Dave, Lauren, Max. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
I edited a good deal of the early podcast, so it was a dream come true to actually be on the show. Thank you, Matt.
How's it on the other side? What's it like?
I'm just sitting here on my yellow chair, so it's fine. It's nice.
Next week, Rick and Morty Companion Podcast live on the Adult Swim streams Monday night at 10. And then we'll release that as a podcast. Call in and chat with some of the folks behind the scenes, critical to the making of these new episodes of Rick and Morty. That's on the Adult Swim streams Monday at 10. Send your requests, comments, concerns, criticisms to adultswimpodcast@gmail.com. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next week.